time for the best coverage of the top stories in sports. The Sports Wrap with Jason Page starts now.
Good to have you with us. This Monday, October 30th, the day before Halloween, 2023. I am Jason Page. Coming up in 30 minutes, Bill Bender does a great job on college football, the sporting news. On the eve of the first release of the college football playoff rankings, oh my, who's going to be the top four? And obviously it's going to change probably plenty between now and the time we get to the college football bowl games, but it'll be interesting to see where the starting point is, because so much of what happens from here does have to do with where we start the conversation. As far as the college football playoff is concerned, because once you're in a certain spot, as long as you keep winning, it's kind of hard to move down in any scenario. So where you start is very important in this conversation. So we'll get to that. Some thoughts on the Major League Baseball World Series. That's coming up in about 45 minutes. Also, something special about the NHL to talk about. Something that makes it unique from the other four major sports, if you want to still have that. That sort of conversation about whatever the four major sports are. So we'll get into that coming up in a few minutes as well. Injuries in the NFL, we'll get into that as well. But first we say hello to our friend Sam Yarnell is here to hang out with us as he always is on the show. And Sam, the only thing we know about week eight, and I got to say this to start. I'll kind of take the lead here. The unpredictability of the NFL just continues to be on display. Every week we think we know what's going to happen. Now, granted, I was 4-0 in Page versus the Prince this week. The first unbeaten week of Page versus the Prince, may I say. 4-0. Thank you to the Baltimore Ravens for not being able to recover an onside kick. We appreciate it. I am 3-1, 3-1, 0-4, and 4-0 in the last 4 weeks of Page versus the Prince. I just want to put that out there. But the unpredictability of the NFL is on display right now. And the one thing I want to stress here as we have this conversation to start the show, everybody, I know that we live in this 24/7, 365 media, sports media world where everybody's got to have something to talk about. And we're all prisoner to the moment to some degree. I try to think we do it less on this show, especially in my shoes, than other shows do it. But everybody freaking out about the Chiefs losing to the Broncos for the first time in like 8 years, or everybody freaking out about the 49ers and what was wrong with them. And when the Bengals were 0-3, Sam Yarnell and others all had them buried. Now we look at Cincinnati and we're like, oh, they could still win a Super Bowl. I mean, yeah, we're trying to dig our way out of it. I think it's all a reminder here through, you know, at basically the halfway point of the NFL season of the fact that it's simply very difficult to predict what's going to happen in this league and that it's a long season, 17 games, 4.5 months for these teams, the beating, the grind of it all. There's going to be lapses. There's going to be games where you fall down. There's going to be games where Patrick Mahomes has the flu. Everybody has to take a breath. It is a long, long season.
It's a dog-eat-dog league, Jason. Any given team can lose any given week. I was a fool. The week five, I think I was. Yeah, it was. This is funny. Week five, I came on the show and said the San Francisco 49ers might be the best team of all time, I think. That may have been my line, or maybe something along the lines of Brock Purdy's a fraud, but the best on paper, the Niners are the best team of all time. I was at least right about Brock Purdy being a fraud. The San Francisco 49ers are a mess. They're not bad. You're right. There's plenty of overreaction to go around. They're a mess. My gosh. There is a serious discussion that needs to be had about Brock Purdy now, though. That was a discussion that everyone just wanted to keep putting off another week and so on and so forth and let him get right the next week. They're 0-3 in their last three games. We need to start talking about the quarterback situation in San Francisco. And if this guy off the street, Brock Purdy out of Iowa State, he might be the one quarterback that Kyle Shanahan couldn't lead to be an actual good
NFL
quarterback.
You're making my point for me right now. See, this is what I mean.
I agree with you.
You're talking about the last three games. How about everything he's done up until those last three games? I know we live in the world of what have you done for me lately? And that's all great, but you've got to take it all in stride. He's played some of that time with an injured McCaffrey, you know, Debo Samuel. I mean, and yes, I get that the 49ers are a team that is ultimately going to have to be completely healthy in order for Brock Purdy to be his very best. They lost yesterday to a potential Super Bowl team in Cincinnati, a team that started out 0-3, now keeps winning games, that is Joe Burrow playing in front of Joe Montana and playing like Joe Montana. You've got to take a break. It's not like they lost to the Sisters of the Poor yesterday.
They lost to the worst Cincinnati team that we've seen since Joe Burrow started his career.
I disagree with that. Just got off to a slow start, and Burrow was
okay,
hurt.
I should say the worst Cincinnati team since Joe Burrow started his career in a year where Joe Burrow did not have a torn ACL. Because okay. That team sucked. That team was horrible. Sure. Cincinnati Bengals are not Super Bowl contenders for me still. They're going to make the playoffs. Sure. They might win the North. No, they're not going to make them. They're not going to win the North. They'll be a wild card team. I don't think they're going to make it out of the first round. If they do make the playoffs, the Bengals, we do not need their defense is still lacking, right? A competent quarterback throws for 700 yards against that defense yesterday. Lou Anarumo has kind of lost his fastball. But also Zach Taylor has exposed himself this year for not being a great coach. With regard to what you were saying about what have you done for me lately, I think it's important in this context because of who Brock Purdy is. He's a quarterback in his second year. I think 3 weeks ago, the NFL collectively probably figured something out about him in that game where he didn't have a healthy McCaffrey. And in these games, since he hasn't had a healthy Debo, I think Brock Purdy has exposed his own flaws, which I would argue that part of the entire game in the NFL is trying to scheme ways to not expose your flaws when you are missing players. So I think that's a way that the 49ers have fallen off over the course of the last 3 weeks. And it's all due to their quarterback situation.
I think he's pressing right now. What I see when I watch him right now is I see a guy that's pressing. I see a guy that for the first time in his brief NFL career is under some adversity and he's trying to make plays that aren't there. You know, people forget, as much as people want to talk about the Niners losing the game, that was a 17-10 game with the Niners driving inside the red zone when he throws the costly pick, which is a great play, by the way, by the defensive player on that play. And then he throws another pick later on. I think he's pressing. That's what I get. Now, this is where coaching matters. You know, we talk about sports where coaching doesn't matter. I think it's overrated in baseball. I know people will say, Bruce Bochy. And I think coaching's overrated in some sports. In this spot, in this league, this is a moment where somebody has to be able to sit down with Brock Purdy and bring the temperature down a little bit for him. Calm the anxiety, calm the need. You don't have to be Joe Burrow. You don't have to be, talk about ghosts of 49ers past, Joe Montana or Steve Young. You don't have to be Aaron Rodgers. You don't have to be Patrick Mahomes. You got to be Brock Purdy. And at some point, when you're putting up all these numbers the way he is, when you're having the level of success that he had, up until 3 weeks ago, he had never lost a game as an NFL starting quarterback. You have to, and at some point, you probably start to believe your own press. And you start trying to do things that maybe you're not suited to doing. And I kind of think that's where Brock Purdy is right now. He needs to get back to play it safe, play it conservative, Brock Purdy. And if he does that, the Niners could still win.
Play it safe, play it conservative, Brock Purdy is kind of what we're still seeing. He only throws the ball to all pro players. He does not throw the ball to not. He had 31 pass attempts yesterday. George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, and Christian McCaffrey were targeted a combined 27 times. Brock Purdy does not know how to throw the ball to anybody who can't run all-pro routes and has all-pro hands. It's as simple as that. And it goes back to the point that I've made for 4 weeks now on this show, that you could take any quarterback off the street that is an NFL athlete, and they would have the same success in the San Francisco 49ers offense. Brock Purdy is, and there's this entire faction of NFL fans that want to talk about Brock Purdy for MVP. My goodness, Christian McCaffrey is the most deserving 49er for MVP. I think there's an argument that we need to start having about Christian McCaffrey being the MVP of the league this year. This is a guy who had 118, quick math, 118 rushing plus receiving yards yesterday, and
18th straight game with a touchdown, I think it was.
Every game this season, that's what matters.
Tied an NFL record.
MVP.
Tied an NFL record for most consecutive games with a touchdown.
There's an argument to be made that Christian McCaffrey is the most deserving player in the NFL of the MVP right now, but some Niners fans think Brock Purdy deserves it. I don't get it. Brock Purdy is maybe, I don't know if I want to go out on a limb and say this, but he's not the most conservative quarterback in the league, but he's damn close to it, Jason. He does not throw the ball to anybody who is not an established all-pro receiver. It's hard to defend. I don't understand why people continue to do it.
I want to get into the other big NFL shocker of the day, where everybody has, you know, is hyperventilating and overreacting. We're going to do that coming up in a couple of minutes. We'll also talk about some big injury news when it comes to quarterbacks around the league. Monday Night Football, not much of a preview there, but we'll try. I'm Jason. Sam Yarnell continues with us as we continue. It's the Sports Wrap on a Monday. Continuing on this Monday edition of the show, this October 30th, 2023. We talked about the surprise yesterday with the 49ers losing their third straight. I don't know how big of a surprise it was, but I mean, Cincinnati's a good team and starting to play Cincinnati Bengals type football. And I said, if there was a team at 0-3 that could sort of rise from the abyss and still be a postseason team, when I think, what, 1 in 100 teams have done it since the start of this divisional sort of alignment? I thought the Bengals were that team. You're starting to see why. Especially when you look at the rest of that division outside of the Ravens. So, the other big shock of yesterday has to be considered what happened in Denver with the Broncos and the Chiefs, unless you're Nick Ferguson, our friend, the former NFL safety, who thinks that it wasn't that big of a surprise. I'm going to have to find out why he thought that was the case. He thinks that Kansas City is coming back to the pack. And again, it goes back to what I said with Sam Yarnell, who's hanging out with us as he does every day on the show. It goes back to what I said about people panicking. If you can go and look at the history of the Kansas City Chiefs over the last 4 years, they have one of these games every year. This is not uncommon for Kansas City to have a game where they struggle, they're lackadaisical, maybe they don't take a team seriously enough. You had Patrick Mahomes, who was under the weather yesterday. The night before was in terrible shape. And everybody's freaking out about Kansas City losing yesterday, when a week ago, we basically crowned them as the best team in the AFC. So to me, it's kind of laughable that just off of one game, 1 week, we get this one giant overreaction. What do you think?
I think that it's crazy that you're saying this now, when this is exactly what I tried to say when the Bills lost to the Patriots. However, I completely agree. The Chiefs are still the AFC favorites. the Chiefs are still the AFC favorites. We have this interesting tendency to do that as football fans, as media members especially. There are conversations that need to be had, though, right? This Chief defense has looked awesome. So the offense kind of whatever. It's kind of a whatever game for me that they scored 9 points. Patrick Mahomes had the flu. It was 32. It was 13 degrees. Whatever. Like that's, like you said, going to happen every once in a while. Your quarterback's going to get the flu. What are you going to do about that? The defense giving up 24 to the Denver Broncos and their feeble offense.
Yeah, short fields. They're playing with short fields, all the turnovers. I'm just not making a big issue of it. I'm not.
I understand, but that's what the Chiefs defense, to me at least, has been so good at this season. And what's made them so great is even when they're facing a short field, not that they have to do it frequently, because Patrick Mahomes does not throw a lot of interceptions and Tommy Townsend is one of the better punters in the NFL. When they do have a short field to deal with defensively, though, weeks 1 through 7, the Chiefs were, they looked great. I don't have any numbers in front of me to immediately back that up, but every time I can remember a team, you know, getting the ball, what are we considering a short field on the other 40 or shorter?
Yeah, just on the other side of the field. Even just saying, even just giving it up on the other side of the, of your own field. You know,
I mean, I would say, right. I was saying 10 yards beyond, yeah, but yeah, we can say 50 or shorter. Right. Sure. It seems like that's when the Chiefs defense really locks down, and it's almost like they play softer shell coverages over the top until a team gets to midfield, and then they really start pressing on the back half. So they didn't do that to Russell Wilson yesterday. It was kind of worrisome, but again, they're still the AFC favorites to me. I don't,
absolutely,
they're better than Cincinnati, hands down. They're better than the Bills, mm-hmm, with the Bills missing such key pieces. And when you look beyond that in the AFC, what, the Dolphins, they can't win a big game.
I stop the conversation right here, because I got a feeling. Woo-hoo. I got a feeling. The team right now that I think everybody should be looking at, I don't even think they're playing their best football. There's two teams that you could say this about. Two teams that I don't even think we've seen their best yet. And they both got two losses. Jacksonville, Baltimore. You got head coaches in both of those teams that know what it takes to win Super Bowls. You've got a quarterback in Lamar Jackson that we all are told is supposed to be that caliber of quarterback. You got a guy in Trevor Lawrence who I don't even think is playing his best football yet, and that team is still 6-2 and a top 5 defense. I mean, that's a top 5, top 6 defense right now in Jacksonville. I love, if you are Doug Peterson and Trevor Lawrence and that Jaguars team, you're flying under the radar right now. Nobody's really talking about you. Everybody's hung up on Kansas City and Buffalo and Miami and, you know, whoever else you want to throw into the Baltimore. Nobody's talking about the Jacksonville Jaguars. And before you know it, and again, they could wind up with one of the best records in the conference. You could wind up having a road that goes through Jacksonville to potentially get to a Super Bowl. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility when you look at the schedule they play, how good that defense is. It's a team that does, and here's the other thing I'll say about Kansas City, Sam. Here's the other thing. When we talk about 9 points yesterday and their offense not being as good as it's been in past years and their red zone efficiency is down 20% from where it was a year ago, all of that stuff is great. Offense is down around the league. Unless you're the Dolphins playing craptastic teams, offense is down every year, everywhere. It's the year of defense in the NFL. It's kind of the thing nobody wants to say, because the league's done everything it could from an officiating standpoint, from rules and all this. You can't hit the quarterback if you blow in his ear. It's a 15-yard penalty. Everybody in this league has done everything they can to make it an offensive league, and you know what we're finding out? Defense still wins. And I'm looking at those teams, Baltimore, Jacksonville, Kansas City, those teams that can lock it down defensively. Those are the teams that you're going to see at the end of this thing.
I'm totally with you on Baltimore, 100%. Baltimore is an electric offense. Odell Beckham Jr. has not caught a touchdown in a Ravens uniform.
He's done nothing.
People don't realize that. Nelson Agholor is contributing to that team, and they're still this good. Imagine they make a move before tomorrow. If DeAndre Hopkins ends up in Baltimore, game over. Game over. See you later. I put a future on the Ravens to win the AFC last week live on the show. I still like it. I think the Ravens are live. When you talk about defenses, the Ravens are the best defense in the league when you talk about points per game. They've given up 15.1. Kansas City's number two, Buffalo's number three. Jacksonville's a joke. No way.
You're Jacksonville's crazy. Defense,
Jacksonville's defense, when you talk about, again, points per game, because points are what win and lose games in the NFL, and I think that's a great metric. Jacksonville's barely top 10. They're number 10 in points per game, 0.2 ahead of Seattle. So, nah. They're actually not even the best defense in that division. It's Houston, which, again, why we have a future on Houston to win that division, because in 2023, defense
not going to happen when you're losing to Carolina at home. Or on the
in the NFL, that was a fluke game. Bryce Young got lucky there.
You can't lose to Carolina and tell me you're going to win a division.
Right. You're right, but it's better to lose to Carolina in week 8 than it is to lose to Carolina in week 13, so get them out early. Got to justify it, man. It's a future. We're still alive. Jacksonville's not going anywhere. They'll be very lucky to win the division. Don't think they will. I think Houston will turn it around. Quite frankly, I think the Carolina game might be a wake-up call. I don't know what Nico Collins and Tank Dell were doing in that Houston offense yesterday. It looked like, you know, they may have gotten the wrong playbook. Maybe they got the playbook for next week or 2 weeks ago because they were on bye last week. But regardless, tough week for Houston all around. I think that they'll figure it out and come back because, like I said, their defense is better than the Jacksonville Jaguars is. They got to figure out the offense a little bit more, and that will come with time with a rookie quarterback and a rookie wide receiver one. I don't trust the Jaguars. Love the Ravens. Feeling great about the Ravens. Again, I would still put the Chiefs in front of them just because – at the end of the day, no matter how much defenses rule in the NFL, like we're seeing that they rule this year, quarterbacks win and lose individual games. Defenses win championships, but quarterbacks win and lose individual games. And Patrick Mahomes is a better quarterback than Lamar Jackson, even though they're 1-3 in the NFL.
Move away from the conversation in the AFC for a second. We had a lot of injuries around the league yesterday at the quarterback position, and none bigger than the one that's on your screen if you're watching the video version of this show, and that was Kirk Cousins going down with a torn Achilles. Second veteran quarterback we've seen go down this year with that sort of injury. And this one, as costly as it was to the Jets to lose Aaron Rodgers, I think it's every bit as costly, if not more, costly to Minnesota to lose Kirk Cousins. And at this stage of his career, the contract status being what it is, lots of long-term questions about what all this means, you know, for Kirk Cousins. But at the same time right now, Kevin O'Connell and company, they've got to figure out where they're going next. This was O'Connell after the game yesterday.
We are fearing currently he's being evaluated and will be into tomorrow. We are fearing an Achilles injury. The severity of that, I do not know at this point. Yeah, I do know one thing, Kev. I do know it's going to have to be an injury that makes him not capable physically of playing, because if it has anything to do with pain tolerance or, you know, a choice to go out on the football field, Kirk Cousins is going to be out on the field. So, like I said, we'll figure out the severity of it. And you guys know, you know, what my fear of is right now of the injury. And, you know, when we confirm that, you know, as an organization, you know, we'll try to move forward in the short term, knowing that, you know, like I said, I'm not sure anybody in this league overall was playing as well, or if not as well as Kirk at the position this year. No, I think in my mind, I think we've got to take a look at potentially all the options, including building the best possible group around Jaron, knowing that, you know, we're going to continue to build a complete offense, you know, based upon a lot more than just the quarterback. But I will say, previously on Monday night and today on third down, you know, Kirk was absolutely fantastic. And, you know, just hurts to know that he's not more than likely going to be able to continue progressing forward on what has really felt like maybe his best season as a pro.
Three teams come out of the NFC as wild cards, Sam. Three. Can the Vikings be one of them without Kirk Cousins at quarterback?
It depends on if they make a move before the end of tomorrow. With Jaren Hall, so you ask without Kirk Cousins.
Well, they got Nick Mullins, which is who's still there.
Which is a different question than with Jaren Hall. With Jaren Hall, the Minnesota Vikings are probably not a wild card team. Probably. I would give them like a 15% chance to make the wild card with Jaren Hall. You go out and get Jacoby Brissett.
Ryan Tannehill?
Ryan Tannehill. Jacoby Brissett, I'd probably give him a 65% chance to be a wild card team. Ryan Tannehill, I'd probably give him a 45% chance to be a wild card team. Kyle Allen.
Kyle Allen? Come on. You're not going anywhere with Kyle Allen.
Well, the Bills wouldn't trade Kyle Allen, but I like Kyle Allen more than I like Ryan Tannehill in that offense for sure. Because here's exactly why: Kyle Allen can move. Ryan Tannehill can't.
Nick Mullins has played in that Kevin O'Connell offense. There are a lot of people that believe they could still make a run with Nick Mullins because of his familiarity with that offense. Everybody likes to put a lot of stock in this idea of having played in a system. And if that's the case, if you believe in that sort of thing, not that I do, by the way, talent's going to talent. If you bring in a guy who's talented enough to play, he'll figure out the system. I don't think Nick Mullins is the answer. I don't think anybody's the answer. I don't think the Vikings are making the playoffs, no matter what they do at this point. They are 4-4, and it's taken a lot. And I give them a lot of credit for getting there, because we were backing up the moving van and basically passing on this season, shipping it off, you know, sending it out to pasture. I give them a lot of credit for getting to 4-4. But, man, it has to be so demoralizing for that franchise to lose Kirk Cousins the way it did yesterday.
I think, so my initial thought, when the news came out, by the way, it's official. The Vikings have come out and said that they do have MRI confirmation. He's done. Kirk Cousins somehow, some way, and I've said it before on the show, and I'll say it for the rest of his career, is a Hall of Fame bag getter. Kirk Cousins knows how to secure the bag better than anybody else in the league, and that's exactly what he did yesterday, because now he's still going to make the rest of that heinous contract that the Vikings gave him this year, and they'll probably franchise tag him for next year. The franchise tag for quarterbacks, I believe, is like $35 million now.
I don't know if it's a given that they tag him, man. You got to see how he's recovering from that. I mean, I don't necessarily know that that's the case.
Who else are they going to put in that offense?
That's always the question.
Kirk Cousins knows that offense so well with all the star power that offense has, with Justin Jefferson and TJ Hawkinson, Jordan Addison being a good young receiver, even Alexander Mattison out of the backfield. Kirk Cousins is the motor that makes those wheels turn. And Minnesota knows that, and they know that their window is very small, and Kirk Cousins is the guy that can actually win games in that offense.
I don't disagree with you, but you're talking about an aging quarterback coming off a torn Achilles. If we were going to have, you know, he's a little younger. I mean, how old is Kirk Cousins? 35 years old. 35 years old, coming off a torn Achilles. That's
why I'm saying they're going to franchise tag him. They're not going to offer him a new contract. No team in the NFL is going to offer him a new contract coming off of a torn Achilles. So the Vikings are going to franchise tag him.
Yeah, maybe. Might have to. I don't know where else they're going. And as much as I want to sit here and say it, it may not make sense. I can't give you an answer as to, you know, who the quarterback's going to be that they can replace him with next year. The Giants lost Tyrod Taylor yesterday. So they were down to Tommy DeVito. And they ran one of the most embarrassing offenses I've ever seen for the final, you know, two-plus quarters of that loss against the Jets. The most unlikely, amazing 4-3 team in the NFL, the New York Jets. They could have been 4-3 with Aaron Rodgers at quarterback when we looked at the schedule before the season started. The Jets at 4-3 is a miracle, but the Giants got issues now at the quarterback position. Taylor's hurt. We already know what's going on with Daniel Jones, the neck injury. We'll see if and when he comes back. Desmond Ridder had a concussion yesterday. He got knocked out of the game. There were a couple of other quarterbacks, too, that got bounced from games yesterday. Man, halfway through the season, we still got a whole half of the season. We're going to do MVP, Rookie of the Year, Coach of the Year, all that stuff coming up on Thursday's show, Contender Pretender on Tuesday's show, Al Bernstein, Hall of Fame boxing commentator with Showtime Boxing is going to be on the show tomorrow to talk about the Tommy Fury, Francis Ngannou fight that took place over the weekend and sort of the state of boxing in general, because I think it's in a very precarious position. We'll get into that with our man Al Bernstein on the show tomorrow as well. But coming up, you're going to want to listen to what Bill Bender has to say. As good as it gets on college football. The sporting news. College football playoff. First set of rankings comes out on Tuesday. Who does he think is going to be in the top four? And beyond. It's next on the Sports Wrap. On this Monday edition of the program, coming up in about 15 minutes, Major League Baseball, World Series, Game 3. We'll preview it, talk about where we are through the first two games of that series. And one of the things that makes the NHL and hockey so unique, we'll get into that as well. But always happy to bring in this guy and talk some college football on this Monday. The great Bill Bender hanging out with us for a few minutes. You can check out his work over at the Sporting News. All right, college football playoff rankings. We're close. The time is upon us. The only rankings that really matter, for as much as we talk about everything that goes on throughout the season, what do you expect to see when that first round of college football playoff rankings comes out?
Now the order is what will interest me, but you know, Florida State will probably stick at number four, you know, based on what we've seen from them. They've been cruising in the ACC, and then let's take your pick. Do you like the two-time defending national champ that looked like the two-time defending national champ on Saturday, Georgia? Do you like Ohio State and their resume, the top 10 victories against Notre Dame and Penn State, though they've been doing it a little bit ugly, or Michigan, who has dominated everybody, but has had some other things going on, obviously, in case anybody's living under a rock with the sign stealing allegations. I think it'll be Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State. That might make some Buckeye fans mad, but it doesn't matter if you're in that top four.
You don't think, Bill, you don't think we're going to be looking at a situation where the committee punishes Michigan for the sign stealing stuff, do you?
No, because Bill Hancock has said it's about what happens on the field. Now, keep in mind, these are not us, not writers and podcasters and radio guys. They are former coaches and athletic directors, and all of them probably have varying opinions on sign stealing. You know, I know Jim Grobe pretty well. I haven't talked to him about it yet, but he's one of the most, you know, high integrity guys you could have on the committee. So it'd be interesting to see how that goes in the meeting room, but I don't think they'll punish them. I think they'll more so look at a roster that has 15 to 20 NFL draft picks on it and has absolutely dominated everybody they've played. Not to mention that for the people saying their schedule is terrible, yeah, nobody's ranked, but I mean, Rutgers and Nebraska and Minnesota, as far as Big Ten records go, is not awful. And they'll play who they need to play over the next month.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you on that. Give me some thoughts on, you know, sort of, you know, at this point in the season, sort of that midway point. Well, not midway point. I mean, most teams got, what, four games left, something like that. Give me some sense for what you think through this stage of the schedule is the biggest surprise to you that we've seen in college football so far.
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, Washington's been a pleasant surprise. I mean, we had some hype around them, but the way Michael Penix has played, they've been...
I mean, the whole Pac-12. I mean, we can talk about the whole Pac-12 really as a surprise, just as how good it's been.
That's probably a better answer, honestly, from Dion to...
But I wanted you to answer it.
Look at you getting the better answer, and I'll just build on that. Well, I'll say this. I mean, the other night, I've been saying this all week now, Arizona's probably the most fun team to watch. I've watched them late night the last couple of weeks. This week, they beat Oregon State. This week, they'll play UCLA. And Noah Fifita has played really well. They are a fun team to watch, and they are a middle-of-the-pack Pac-12 team. So the entertainment value of that conference with the quarterbacks and teams is very high. I think going into this weekend, you're going to see a little bit of some heated games. Like UCLA and Arizona are going their separate ways. Oklahoma State will be hot. And Kansas State, Texas. Those are three good examples of realignment's going to change the game. You know, but Jason, those Oklahoma State's going to be as good as it gets this weekend.
Talk about Oklahoma, obviously, with the loss to Kansas. I made the point on X, formerly known as Twitter, this weekend. I made the point that, you know, for all this bluster and everything we hear about Colorado, that's 4-4 because they only won one game last year and they got a head coach who goes by Coach Prime, that, you know, we talk about Colorado and we get Colorado stuff down our throats. Kansas is about as good a story as there is in college football. This was a terrible team. You know, slightly, what were they, 6-7 last year or 5-6 last year, whatever it was. They were not a very good team. They go out and beat Oklahoma. Nobody's talked about Kansas because it doesn't have all the glamour and glitz around it that Coach Prime in Colorado has. So give a little love to Kansas.
Yeah. Lance Leopold's done a great job, and for them to score that victory with Jason being a backup quarterback who I would compare to like the most ultralight version of Brett Favre you can find on the field, you know, because one pass, an absolute dime, the next pass, triple coverage. He's a fun watch. Guys like that, you know, I don't worry about their pro prospects. They run the ball well with Devin Neal. They had 225 yards on the ground, and I think it speaks to Big 12's in trouble as far as the playoff goes because, like I said, Oklahoma plays the Oklahoma State team as a running back averaging 200 yards the last 4 weeks. Ollie Gordon. Texas plays Kansas State, and Kansas State's gotten their act together. They won their last two games 82-3, and they're the defending Big 12 champions. So both – and their Texas is playing with a backup quarterback. I think – that's a conference that's in trouble as far as their college football playoff hopes if you're pinning it on Oklahoma and Texas, one or the other, winning out.
Are you surprised that there are 15 voters that think Georgia isn't number one?
No, because there's still, like I said, it's still a little bit of take your pick among the three. And you, as well as I, know that the committee is going to pick a buzzword tomorrow night. And I don't know which one it is. Is it game control? If it's game control, it's Michigan. If it's resume, it's Ohio State. If it's trying to think how they will spin Georgia, I mean, something like how they looked recently. We do a blank canvas each week, and last week Georgia was the best team. You'll hear blank canvas. I can make you a bingo card of college football playoff committee terms. And they'll pick which one matters this week. But the that's why I said, like, somebody might value what Ohio State's done with the two top 10 wins. Somebody might value that Michigan's just destroying everything in its path. And somebody might value, and I'm kind of the guy that my editor gets on me about it, is that I look at Georgia and they're the king till somebody knocks them off. And I'm very interested to see what they do with Missouri this weekend.
We got a bunch of unbeatens 1-5, obviously, Georgia, Michigan, Ohio State, Florida State, and Washington. And then you've got two other unbeatens in there with Air Force and James Madison that are in the top 25. Do either of those teams, do you see a path for either of those teams when it comes to the playoff?
Who's that?
Air Force or James Madison.
No, you cut out there for a second.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Do you see a path for either of those two teams as it relates to the playoff or even being able to sniff it?
James Madison, they're not even going to consider, which is just wrong. Like, I had to double check that over the weekend where they aren't even going to be considered in the rankings. So an 8-0 team's not going to be ranked. They should be in a bowl game. I think it's ridiculous. Air Force, I selfishly kind of hope they get some consideration, but they'll be ranked, like, they'll bury them at like 18 or 19. What I love about Air Force is not only Troy Calhoun, and he's been there forever. This is probably his best team. That quarterback, Zach Larrier, got it out of knee injury a couple weeks ago. They lead the nation in rushing offense, but they got a defense too. It's like the ultimate academy team here. And I hope they get to the New Year's Day Six. I have them projected to play Washington in the Fiesta Bowl, which, imagine watching a game where one team leads a nation in rushing, one team leads a nation in passing. I love contrast and styles games like that.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. Given where we are at this stage of the season with all the teams that are still undefeated, and obviously there's going to be a little bit of attrition there, and some of that will go by the wayside. Can you see a two-loss team, a good two-loss team, that still potentially has a shot at this thing?
LSU. LSU, if they win the SEC. If they beat Alabama this week, if they beat Georgia. You know how politics works with this? They'll start politicking that they stepped out and played Florida State. You know, even though that they'll conveniently, and as we do in politics, they will quickly discard the second half against Ole Miss where they couldn't make one tackle. I could see them making a very strong case for LSU in this last month because Jaden Daniels leads the nation in total offense, because they would have wins against Alabama and Georgia, and because it's the SEC, and they politic better than anybody else in college football. So they're the one. Notre Dame's also interesting, but that Louisville game's going to just continue to haunt them all the way to the New Year's Day Six, I think.
Yeah, I was angling at Notre Dame. I was curious to see if you would bring up Notre Dame. That was my passive-aggressive way of mentioning Notre Dame.
This is the problem for Notre Dame, and they're going to Death Valley this weekend. That's not a gimme. I know Clemson is bad, but it's not – you can't just show up. They played the toughest month of the schedule anybody played this year when they played USC, Louisville, Ohio State, Duke. And Duke when Duke was Duke. And in some – I get what you're saying, because that should be rewarded, but I just know how we're conditioned to look at the win-loss totals. Like in terms of Notre Dame's schedule, yeah, you can't – we love beating down their schedule. They played a heck of a schedule this year. So, but yeah, and maybe the Notre Dame fans that are listening are going to get mad because I supported Brian Kelly instead.
Before I let you go, another hazing scandal in college football. Axios had this story this morning. I mean, it's all over the place, but Axios had a thing on it. This former freshman quarterback, AJ Perez, mm-hmm. University of San Diego, 50 unnamed people alleging severe and pervasive acts of hazing. As somebody who's been around the sport plenty, as somebody who's even, as we've talked about off the air, you played the game in high school. Give me some sense for your level of surprise that we continue to see these sorts of hazing stories that are pervasive throughout college football. Obviously, it's not at every school. Or maybe it's at more schools than we think, and it just doesn't get reported because guys don't want to worry about, you know, losing their protection if they're a quarterback or potentially losing a spot on the team, whatever it may be. How much does it surprise you that we continue to see these stories in light of the punishments that have been given out for these types of things?
Yeah, we were talking about off the air about my experiences in high school and being in a locker room and being a freshman when there were seniors was terrifying at first. But, you know, we had one of those programs where hazing didn't really happen and you get made fun of a little bit, but as long as you stood up for yourself, it was fine. And there was nothing even close to what's going on at some of these college campuses, which when you talk to former players, and I did over the summer after Northwestern, they were just shaking their heads like, No. And I really believe at the winning cultures, and you hear that all the time from coaches, culture, culture. If I had a counter at preseason media days, every coach says it. A winning culture to me would have a senior getting a freshman ready to play. You see that at the Alabamas. I mean, Downs is one of the best safeties in the country. You see that at the Ohio States, the Michigans, those type programs where freshmen are able to step in and contribute. And you do it by not being wasting your time doing silly things. I also believe that a locker room should be more like a professional workplace. If it's not something you and I can do in an office that would be deemed acceptable, then it shouldn't be done in a college locker room. And I don't want to hear boys will be boys. I mean, Northwestern is proof enough that, I mean, come on, man, it's 2023. This isn't the 1970s. Behave accordingly in a locker room.
Bill Bender does a great job, college football. The Sporting News, check out his work there. I'm sure he'll have plenty to write about after we see our first college football playoff rankings. Always appreciate it, my friend. Be well.
Hey, no problem, Jason. I'll talk to you soon.
Bill Bender joining us on the show. Stick around. I got more to talk about, including something on Major League Baseball. You know, that whole World Series thing. We'll get into that. Also, one of the things that makes hockey truly special and unique. We'll get to that as well as we continue on this Monday edition of the Sports Wrap. Rolling along on this Monday edition of the show, getting set to wrap things up. Again, tomorrow, Al Bernstein on the pod / VOD. Showtime boxing analyst. Who knows? Maybe we'll have somebody else. There's a Monday Night Football game tonight. You might have noticed we didn't talk about it much. It's a real good reason. It's a crappy game. And if the Raiders beat Detroit, I will eat my... I don't want to say I'll eat my shoe because I already got one I got to eat. What was that?
Then you'd have, say it, because then it would make an even pair.
Yeah.
So then you could go out and buy a pair for one. By the way, we need to still figure out when you're going to do that live on the show, because you're going to do it live on the show.
Yeah. You know what we should make me do instead of eating a shoe? We should make me drink this. We should make me drink this Coca-Cola Y3000, which is supposed to be the worst thing that Coke has ever put out. Like, if it's on a shelf right now, get it and save it, because it's going to be a commemorative bottle, because this thing is like supposedly the worst thing ever. And I have not tried it yet. I have two bottles. I have one to drink and one to save. Sorry, Coke, if you want to come on as a sponsor.
So my thoughts on that. You are absolutely, absolutely hilarious. If you think that you're going to get out of eating a shoe.
You want me to die?
Drinking a soda.
That's supposed to be the worst soda ever, though. Like, worse than New Coke.
I don't care if it's the throw-up flavored jelly bean you're going to eat. Actually, that we could do. If you get the whole the jelly bean thing, that it's like they're the same color, and one of them's really good. You have to eat the whole bag. That can make up for eating the shoe. Eating the whole bag, all of the bad flavors and all the good ones too, but all of the bad flavors, then that'll make up for eating the shoe. But drinking that, you can drink that soda if the Raiders beat the Lions tonight. How about that?
Okay. Raiders aren't beating the Lions.
No.
Do we know how good Detroit has been at home, and Jared Goff has been really good at home? World Series game 3 tonight. Who you got in Phoenix?
It's a toss-up.
It's going seven.
Brandon Fott.
It's going seven.
That's what we said before the series. And, hey, I mean, it looks like it through the first two. If we get the Brandon Fott of the beginning of the season, forget about it. It's Rangers all day. If we get the Brandon Fott of his second start against the Phillies, give me the Diamondbacks and put 3.5 mortgages on it.
I mean, we've got Max Scherzer doing a rehab assignment in the postseason. It's the dumbest. I'm going to continue to say it. It's the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Forget about what Brandon Fott we get, because I think we know what Brandon Fott we're getting at this point. We don't have any idea what Max Scherzer we're getting. And if Max Scherzer is the Max Scherzer we've seen through the first two appearances of this postseason, they're not winning anything tonight.
It's funny. You know the last time Max Scherzer started a World Series game? Mm. it was 4 years ago today in Houston. And it ended like that. I'm never going to bet against Max Scherzer in the World Series.
Yeah.
If this game is lost by the Rangers, I think it'll be their bullpen that ends up doing them in, because
they're still favored to win the series, by the way. Minus 142, Diamondbacks plus 118. If not for a Corey Seager miracle two-run home run in the ninth inning the other night, this is a 2-0 series going back to Phoenix. The Diamondbacks have seriously outplayed the Rangers through the first two games, if you look at it.
But at the end of the day, the Rangers have so much more talent in their lineup, and that's why the odds makers are putting it. They have to cover their own butts, because there's always a chance the Rangers break out and win three straight. There's a chance the Rangers get the bats hot and score, you know, 21 runs over the course of the next three games in the World Series. And we're talking about the 2023 World Series champion Texas Rangers. That's why those odds are listed that way. And it's why I'm still not going to touch a live winner of this series. I liked the snakes in seven at plus 590 before the series started, but I'm not going to touch this series live at all. And the reason is because part of the greatness about this series, us as purists in baseball, as baseball lovers and diehards, we understand that that's the great thing about this series, is it's no one knows what's going to happen next, right? Like a fan, all of the fans, not one fan, all of the fans could collectively storm the field and it wouldn't be the worst thing or the weirdest thing that's happened in the postseason so far this year. I'm not touching this series live, not touching this game on the money line. Might go over 9.5, though. There, it seems like we get runs in this series, so I think over 9.5 is probably the play.
Diamondbacks minus 104 tonight. The Rangers are minus 112 with Max Scherzer on the mound. Vegas still showing a little faith in him. Odds and ends to wrap it up. We had a big commitment in college basketball, didn't we, Sam?
Yeah. Under 45.5 tonight in Raiders Lions.
What about the college basketball recruit? That's what I was asking you about.
Cooper Flagg, whatever. He's going to Duke. No one cares. Maine, he's played against nobody in high school. Maine is a mid state. Been there a bunch. It's super mid. Cooper Flagg's going to be a mid basketball player. See ya.
You sound bitter. Where'd you want him to go? Hofstra?
Anywhere but Duke, dude. Like, why do you have to go to Duke? Why go to Arizona or USC or somewhere fun where the weather's nice? Not North Carolina.
Not surprised he went to Duke. I know there were some people that were hoping he was going to go to UConn. I'm sure Dan Hurley was hoping he'd go to UConn. For the game tonight, by the way. You see, you're pointing down, which means you're pointing for the under.
Change my pick over 45.5. Boom.
Now it's 46.5 on FanDuel. No, no, it just went back to 40.
There it is. 45
yeah,
and
it
half
just went.
Virginia.
It's 45.5. I see. It's 45.5.
Over. Boom. Over. Let's ride.
You think the Raiders are going to score enough points?
I don't know. I don't. I have. 35, 13. I don't know anything about the NFL and betting. Clearly, I've shown that over the last however many weeks on the show.
How'd
so
you do this week?
I'm going against my initial instinct.
What'd
and
you
we're
do
going
this week?
Over 45.
What'd you
and
go?
A half.
1-4 this week? Because we gave you a bonus pick.
No, 0-4-1. Thanks for letting me hit the bonus bet with the Jets -3. That was the only push I had. All my original picks were losers. I hope you're fading me, listeners.
You should be right now. It's going to wrap it up for us. I'm Jason Page. That's Sam Yarnell. Thank you very much to Bill Bender for hanging out with us as well. Back here for the sports wrap on Tuesday. We'll have a Monday Night Football recap, Al Bernstein, a whole bunch more. Thanks for being with us. See ya.